This is the home of Jerry's Percentages.
My worst nightmare. You're all pigeons. Filthy, filthy pigeons.
Shut up and drive.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
You got it all organized over there?
Well, I think I've said this before, but what happens is Steph comes in during the break, and she steals my pen all the time. Which I probably shouldn't be holding a pen, because all I do is fidget with the pen.
You go top over bottom, like you just keep flipping it around. It's your chew toy.
What are those new things? Like, they're really big now. What
fidget
are they called?
Spinners.
Yeah, I should get one of those.
We should all get one.
You see that's the big thing now on Tinder, because... like, my understanding, I've never been on Tinder before.
Fidget spinners are big on Tinder?
Well, it's guys who just swipe right for every single girl. So they just put it, like, because it spins, right? So they get it spinning.
I get it.
And then they just...
put their phone underneath the fidget spinner?
And let it go for, like, 2 hours, and they've swiped right on, like, 15,000 girls.
Good God. People are nuts.
They are nuts. That happened with me recently. We were in Austin for a bachelor party. And all the single guys on Tinder, we landed. Before we were off the plane, guys just like, right. I don't think one of them got a nibble. Not one of the loser buddies I had with me in Austin even got a response. But they must have swiped right on 20,000 women in the greater Austin area.
32?
33.
If you were single, would you be on Tinder?
Probably. I missed out. Like, I've been with my wife for 9 years. I don't regret any of it. I'm a happily married guy. Love it. But I just missed out on everything. Like, online dating, Tinder, Bumble, all that stuff. I swear it started like a year after I got into a serious relationship.
Well, I'm not on that nonsense anymore either. But when I became single, I thought it was like hookup central. Then everybody's like... their last paragraph is no hookups. So I'm like,
what do you mean no hookups?
They're
like
little
at
bio.
Any point?
They're a little bio, looking for the real thing, and then but people are like, oh, they all say that, but you can, you know, I'm not getting into this.
But anyway, at some point there will be a hookup. I mean, if there's gonna be a relationship, it's not like 10 dates into it, the girl can still say, sorry, should have read the fine print, no hookups at any point.
Dude, I met somebody on Tinder. And we had a match, and I said, hey, how about a coffee one day? She goes, we have to talk a lot more before that happens. I'm like, what the? Like, can you imagine? How about just a casual coffee and just say hello?
Like,
no
what,
way.
She thought you were a serial killer or something?
Dude, I have no idea. I just...
because that is the screening process. The cup of coffee is the screening process.
No kidding.
This is how warped people have become with technology. That's all it is now. I need to talk. I need to go back and forth on email.
I need to text you more.
Before I can meet you and have a...
stupid, man.
A personal conversation.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not on that anymore.
I hear you, man. The whole grind. It's a grind being out there. Being in the game. Being on the scene. I feel like I would be a lost cause. I've been out of the game for so long. Wouldn't even know where to start. I guess you download an app. I guess that's your first move. If you're single for the first time in a long time, the first thing you do is download an app.
I say you private booth it and just get just monster loads of Grey Goose ordered to the booth, and you go old school. Forget about the app.
Yeah, we should start that, man. Put an end to Tinder and all that garbage. Get back to face-to-face interactions.
Hooking people up. How about that?
How about that?
If you're from 25 to 35 and single, send us your profile. We'll find a match.
Do you really want to get in on that game? Do you know how dangerous that is? Start hooking up a lunatic with a nice person. And
dude, we only have good people follow our show.
You don't think there's any lunatics that tune into the show? Yeah, there are. There's got to be a couple.
Oh,
I'm not saying I don't support the fact that they tune in. We appreciate anyone that's willing to take time, but there's got to be a couple of people out there where you'd be like, it's an interesting lifestyle choice. Big fans of the show. You really think people are going to look to us to start hooking up their personal lives?
I think it's a good platform, don't you? Hey, new to the area, you know any grit grinders? I'm a grit grinder.
That's what people are looking for?
I don't know.
All right, we got Ray on the phone. When was the last time you spoke with Ray?
It's been a while. Ray, if you were single right now, would you be on Tinder?
Probably.
You horny little devil, you.
I'm like, I could never come up with anything original enough to, that somebody'd be interested, so I could just, I don't know, this seems like it would be right up my alley.
Well, it's weird though, right? Because if you want to be face to face.
But hang on a sec, Ray, what do you think about I was on Tinder a long time ago and I met somebody and I was like, hey, you want to meet up for a coffee, casual talk? And she was like, wow, we got to talk a lot more than this before we have coffee. I'm like, well, what the hell are we even doing here?
Yeah, no, that's the wrong page. Forget it. If not, I'll just go sit in a coffee shop. I mean, like, no.
I'll go to the Brass Rail is what I'll go, where I'll go.
Yeah, like, it's like I the simplicity apparently of it seems to appeal to me more than that you'd have to go through the whole rigmarole again. No
yeah.
chance.
But the thing is, man, if you want to have face-to-face contact and like, meet someone, you're the creepy guy. Like, that's kind of what I gather from all this. You have to be prepared to text back and forth for, like, weeks before maybe you go to emails, and then after that, maybe we'll meet for coffee. Or I would be like, why don't we just meet for coffee? Like, what are we texting back and forth? What's the point?
See, somewhere along that process, I'd rather go hit balls.
Yeah. That's true. You got a tea time, forget it.
I'm like, yeah, okay, wait a minute. It's too much effort here. My 7-iron's a little weak right now. I'm going to go out to the course. Talk to you later.
Well, we were talking about this Tiger update. I don't know if you read it. He posted a blog today.
Better than yours, right?
Right, but is this even news anymore for you, his updates?
No. No more. I hope he can come back and play some events because I love watching him play, and I love the sport when he's involved because it gives it more juice. But if he goes and plays four holes and plays them 3-under in the backyard, that's great. Good.
He's only going to be relevant if he gets in the back nine in contention on a Sunday.
Right, because what difference does it make if he can pop it up, pop up a 68 and then he withdraws and then you're like, oh man, see, same thing. It's unfortunate. But I'm not awaiting or expecting him to be, to make some rousing comeback. I hope he does because I like watching him play, but I just don't see how that's possible.
No, I'm in the same boat. It doesn't mean anything. Posting blogs, tweeting out updates, doing the odd interview with Tom Rinaldi. No, thanks. Like, I'd like to see you play four rounds, break 70 multiple times.
Pat Perez, who's on tour, basically summed it up the best. He has to stay relevant. So as soon as he starts fading away, he's got to come out with this post, feeling better than ever. He's got to show up somewhere with his new TaylorMade bag and TaylorMade driver and his Bridgestone golf ball. But the fact is, he can't beat anybody.
What does it say about the sports world, though, that maybe the greatest athlete of the 21st century feels like he needs to stay relevant? Like, what does it say about the news cycle and what we do for a living? I mean, we all contribute to it, but...
Well, Ray, I don't know what you think, but I thought it was pretty cool being a pro athlete. The bright lights, people are watching you, the no helmet and warm-up. It's pretty cool to be relevant.
I think I told this story before, like when I retired. The next October, Cammy and I went to a game, and, we just went to go watch. And the guys came out of the tunnel, and I was not, like... I literally started to cry. I was like, I am never doing that again. Like that, it was everything that I'd been forever. It was the coolest. It was the most fun. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm never going to get to do this again. And so whatever you do, and I fell into this and this is awesome, but it's not the same. It just, so, what if the guys that I'm interested in are guys that get completely out of the sport and they go and they, they're in a job that you don't ever hear about, but they do really well and they work hard at it. And I'm like, I wonder how they just park all that aside, like all the glamour. Now, if you're the best of the best, and now, like, he's also the best of the best, but he never had the magnetism or the likability of Wayne Gretzky. Or, like, you know, Wayne Gretzky shows up, everybody wants to be around him. Everybody wants to hear what he has to say. It, you know, I don't ever hear or know of Tiger Woods going to a dinner and entertaining everybody, you know, like going as a main speaker. Gretzky does this stuff all over the place, and I think it speaks to just the way he is. Tiger has to be at the forefront. I mean, his personality, that's what it is. It was always about winning and dominating and making, you know, putting other people in their place. And I'm sure it's pretty tough now to go play four holes and your back hurts, and that's what the best you got.
Well,
like that would suck.
Just to end this Tiger discussion, I think that's kind of where he kind of probably got himself into trouble as far as his whole life. I mean, it was just about Tiger, golf ball, get it in the hole, hit it 7,000 miles, golf, 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 golf. And then I think he started hanging out with Michael Jordan and Charles Barkley a little bit in Vegas, and he was like, whoa, there's a lot of other stuff out there that I like.
Well, listen, at least he got to live the life, though, for a long time. I mean, you just talked about it, Ray, how tough it was for you to realize that you're never going to do it again. You got to do it over 1,200 times. Imagine the guy that got to do it like 20 and then was told, no, you're not good enough and you're never coming back. That's got to be way more difficult.
I was just, for some reason, I don't know what I was thinking, but I checked out the hockey bio of a former Carolina first-round pick. He ended up with 4 goals and 8 assists. Never played.
Right.
Went to Europe and bounced around. I don't know what the hell the guy's doing now.
And think about him walking away saying, like, I never really got to live the life.
No, I never lived the life.
Right.
And it's, yeah, and that's why I think you see, like, guys make goofy decisions and, you know, like, you're in the life and you want to live it to the full and you're not probably mature enough to handle it. And then all of a sudden, poof, it's gone. And you got a lot of years after you retire. There's got to be some, or not got to be, there is a lot of guys that just can't find the next page. And it's got to be really hard.
What do you make of this Kyle Dubas report that he was granted permission, or the Avalanche were granted permission to chat with him? And
just as far as how he kind of came about as somebody that they would want to talk to. We discussed earlier, Ray, like, you know, sometimes when you have someone in your organization kind of putting a bug in the, like we talked about Botterill in Buffalo, there's talks that Mary Lemieux was in talks with people saying, you got to look at this guy, he's the next greatest thing. How does this come about?
Well, I would say the first thing we saw last year with the Avs is, while teams try to tank all the time, they weren't trying. Like, they weren't trying to tank.
Troubling.
Yeah. They were just rudderless. Like, they didn't have, like, what is their system? What are they trying to do? Like, with the Leafs, you could say, they're trying to draft as much skill as they can. They don't care what it looks like. They don't care what the package is. They want skill. And then they're going to figure out the rest of the stuff as they go along. And that's their mode. That's what they're looking to do. In Colorado, what would that be? I can't even define it. So hiring somebody like Kyle, or talking to somebody like Kyle, who has a, you know, in fairness to him, he's got this reputation of being an analytics guy, and that's all he does. And that's probably not the case, but his analytical look would give them something completely different. Now, where does that come from? I mean, I don't know this, and I'm just going to, I mean, it's 100% speculative, but I would suspect that the Board of Governors meetings and things, Joe Sakic and Brendan Shanahan, who were teammates on the Olympic team, had a conversation. And Joe's the president there, and he's got to hire a new general manager. And maybe the discussions come around and Shanahan says, look, you know, we got, you know, Kyle Dubas is here. This is what he's done. This is what he's done with the Marlies. We're really happy with what he's done. You know, lose here. He's not going to be the general manager here. Might be somebody you want to talk to. And then all of a sudden, it's in motion. And I'm not surprised that he would be a person of interest at all. What they have to do is define what the hell they're trying to do there. And if it leads to somebody like Kyle, then that's the road they go down. But in the discussions, they might find out, oh, we want to go down this different road, and that leads to a different person. But it's pretty, you know, I mean, they're clearly not returning almost anything that looked like last year's management. You know, I mean, all the coaches went, you know, all the assistants went today. You know, for as tough a spot as it was for Jared Bednar to go in there last year, by the way, you're coming in late, 2 weeks before camp, and these are your coaches. This is your coaching staff. Like, what? They didn't have a chance. It was a mess.
Well, and Sakic, let's be honest, it has not worked out very well for him. And I said this in the previous hour, putting Dubas aside, putting any potential names aside, what makes anyone believe Sakic is going to get it right? Like, he just doesn't have the track record over the past 4 years that would suggest that he's on top of things in Colorado.
Well, I would say what is getting it right is taking himself out of the decision-making process on a day-to-day basis, having to answer all that is in the organization. Hiring a general manager, hiring a new assistant general manager, spreading out the management detail. That has to happen. Because at the end of the day, when Waugh left, it was Sakic sitting in a big office. And, well, how would you have the wherewithal to pull off moves that Lou Lamoriello was making last year? Like in the last 2 years? Like, I don't think, even though the Devils kind of went off the rails at the end, you can't, in my opinion, overlook what experience does. And Lou and the Maple Leafs were able to make guys disappear off the roster. They paid what they had to pay. They were able to move people around because of their financial might. They make the David Clarkson trade. Like, all these things that had to happen, how would Joe Sakic, or a really inexperienced manager for that case, know how to even approach that? Who do you talk to about it? Who do you rely on? You know, certain general managers always have guys that they go to. Now, those are their deal makers when they get stuck. And how would Joe be able to build that? So I think the best thing that could have happened to Colorado is that they just totally cratered and were, like, since our team in Atlanta, they were the worst team in the NHL. And that's a good thing, because that forces you to make change. It's not like in 99-2000, we were the worst team by 4 miles, and there was no media, there was no analytics, man. I would choke to see what our analytics would have looked like on that team. So it just kind of went into the next year. Well, you can't do that now. And so that forces change, and that's what they need to have happen.
Ray, I see you getting into it a lot with, I don't know if it's analytics people, or what is with all these people that just come out with these voices and fake outrage about certain things that just pop up when there's 10 other examples that don't equate to that? I just find it weird how and these people work hard. They have a place in hockey. They want to find out some different numbers or whatever. But you can't just go off when something works once, and then it's just, there's 10 other examples how it's garbage.
Well, I think this speaks to, like, sports and politics, and more and more now there's no gray area to anything. It's you're way on this side or way on that side, and there's nothing in the middle. And so where this all started this morning, I was up early, and, you know, and so I'm reading through, and I read a tweet from Connor McKenna, who's in Montreal, and he's a big P.K. Subban fan. And he wrote that P.K. was charged with shutting down Taves and Getzlaff and one other forward, I forget who, and those guys only combined for 6 goals. And so I just tweeted back and said, was anyone else on the ice? Or was it just him? And that, my point is, it's not just that P.K. Subban shut down these players. That's absurd. He doesn't do that. Nobody does that. You need everybody else on the ice to do that, too. I assume his partner, Matthias Ekholm, was out there, too. So the problem with it is Now the defenders of Subban say he's the very best defenseman, and if you don't agree with that, they think you mean he's the very worst. And I don't feel like that. I don't think that. I don't think he's the best defenseman on their team. I, myself, prefer Roman Josi. That's just what I prefer. Now, it might be wrong, but that's what I prefer. So that doesn't mean I think PK's terrible. What I think is they've got an unbelievable top four defense. But the argument gets run right into the wall because there's like people feel like their opinion's not being heard. I have people telling me it's a fact he's the best defenseman on the team. How's it a fact? Because his possession number or his minutes or it, that's not the case. It's your opinion is he's the best. That's good. Good for you. I don't agree. I'm not going to argue with you about it, but I don't agree. And that's where I think this stuff gets run right into the ditch. And Subban is a polarizing guy because he's out there. He's in your face. He's demonstrative. He's emotional. Some people like that. Some people don't.
Well,
I just prefer Josi as a player. I prefer him, his style, a little bit more than Subban's. I don't love on the power play coming out of your end, the behind-the-back spinorama pass that almost gets intercepted for a breakaway. That's not my preference. I prefer something a little more straightforward.
They're very fortunate. I mean, these guys are not at this level right now, but I'm sure back in the mid-2000s, some people like Pronger, some people like Niedermeyer. And guess what? They're both great players, and they were both on the ice every second shift, and they won a Stanley Cup.
There was Lidstrom, Pronger, Niedermeyer, and everybody had their own.
Everyone's got their own thing, but on that Ducks team in 07, they were both on the same team. Some, I'm sure, were like, well, I like Niedermeyer, some like Pronger. Ultimately, everyone in the hockey world would take both guys because they're both great players, but it really, it's the Montreal effect more than anything else. Like, it's because he was in a Canadian market, but specifically Montreal, Toronto, or Vancouver. Any of those three teams generate so much buzz and so much loudness in terms of the hockey world. Like, if PK grew up, if he spent his first 7-8 years playing in Arizona, and then the exact same thing played out, he was a fan favorite, he had the same style, the same personality, all that, and got traded to Nashville, no one up here would care. Nobody would.
Right.
It's because of Montreal, because of association to Montreal, because of how much they loved him there. And it's almost as if I feel people on Twitter, what they're really doing is, probably on radio too, they're like speaking directly to Marc Bergevin. It's not even to Ray Ferraro or Brian Hayes or anyone else who has whatever opinion. It's as if anyone that is going to spit out something about PK, it's directed right at Bergevin and how much they hate him and hate the fact that he decided to trade him.
Okay. I don't think there's any question about that, Brian. Totally, totally agree. And here's the other thing that I would say. And so it doesn't, because my opinion, I think, is more balanced because I could care less if Montreal wins or Nashville wins. I really don't care. I don't have a jersey for either of the teams. That I can say with great confidence, they're not in the finals. Nashville, because of PK Subban. They're not in the finals because of Roman Josi. They're in the finals because over the last 3 or 4 years, they added Subban, Forsberg, to their Johansson, mm-hmm. to their lineup. They're getting the best goaltending they've got from Pekka Rinne in about 5 years. He's phenomenal. He's a Conn Smythe winner. If you're dropping the trophy down today, he's the Conn Smythe one. They drafted well. They got Victor Arvidsson, and that's why they're in the finals. It's not because of PK Subban. And because I don't think like that, people view it that I think he's terrible. No, he's a big part of the puzzle. Of course he is. But this is, for Montreal, this is the second worst scenario that can be happening. The worst is that Nashville wins 4 more games and PK brings the cup back to Montreal and has a parade down St. Catherine Street.
Which I think he probably will, and I think it will be promoted and supported by every fan and every media type in the city. And you know what? I love the trade because of the amount of material it's supplied me. I love it. I love talking about this.
It's fantastic.
It's outstanding. People love talking about this kind of stuff. I mean, it's a trade. This is now, Toronto's different because it's such a hockey market, and PK's from here, and the Habs, there's such a connection. But it's been a big, big story for 12 months in Toronto, and he's never played here. He was an arch enemy of fans here. And yet, I get the impression, just based on the way we do our show, there's a lot of people out there that are very intrigued by the conversation, too.
Well, it's pretty impressive for PK Subban. I think we had this discussion earlier in the year, Brian, where we're like, have you even talked about PK Subban this year? We are now, because his team is back in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Right. Absolutely.
And that forces the conversation down the road. And he's played a central figure, and it's impossible not to notice how effective he's been, and also to notice that Montreal went out in the first round. He's a phenomenon, really, because of the way you can't separate it. For me, you can't separate the personality from the player, from the contract, from the city. Like, it's all meshed in, and for a lot of guys, you mesh all that stuff in, and it's a really boring, bland soup. PK, it's like the most spicy thing ever. It's like there's all kinds of edges to him, and some people like it, and some people don't. And that will be till the day he retires.
And it's great for the NHL.
And then probably pass that.
Yep, because he'll get into media, and I think he'll be outspoken. He can do whatever he wants. He'll have a ton of money, huge profile.
He's going to be in politics.
You think? Yeah, he could. Yeah. He could go down that road.
That's where hell, he's got a long way to go, but that's where I wouldn't be surprised at all if that's where it ended for him. Well, once he's finished playing.
He's an interesting figure, and let's be honest, when the NHL can use it, like, that's what they need. They need their Tim Tebow, their Johnny Manziel, their whoever it is. You know, every other league seems to have a couple of guys who, when in doubt, you can bring them up and people will be intrigued by what they're doing. And at least when the team's winning, that applies with PK. All right, buddy. Good stuff, man. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Good to talk to you. And Hayes, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, buddy.
All right, Ray.
As Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst. Steph stole my pen and she stole my lineup.
She is having a day today.
Just a thief.
You know the day that she complains about me and Noodles? We're complaining about her today.
Mm-hmm.
They're not focused. They're not doing anything today.
We think Craig Cunningham will join us, former NHLer, just hired today as a pro scout with the Coyotes. I'm looking forward to catching up with him. Like, his story is...
Are we doing that today?
Yeah, I think we're going to do it in a few minutes. So we'll push Jerry's back. We got Steve Phillips coming up.
We got a heck of a show coming.
We got a lot of things cooking here. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
A couple of big movies could be coming out, too. I want to get your take on which one you would rather choose.
You're dangerous.
That's a tease. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050, and on the TSN Go app. So we just got up with Ray Ferraro. Ray joins us every day around 5 p.m. I'm struggling today, man.
You're awful, man.
I have really been having issues. My ins and outs have been weak. My big rig brewery read was awful.
It's the worst show you've ever done.
Struggling.
Have an idea.
I mean, have an idea.
I am Joe Namath right now. You're Susie Colbert.
I want to kiss you. He was a wreck then.
Wow, was he really having himself a night?
Like, I can have a night, but I want to kiss you night.
You can't go on TV if you're doing that.
No.
Like, you have to know better. Namath knows better. But I'm struggling today. And what I meant to say was Ray Ferraro joins us every day at 5.
Sure it's not Ferraro?
It doesn't matter. He's not on the phone. And Ray goes way back with our next guest. In fact, he kind of hooked this up. Staff was reaching out to Ray and said, can you try to get Craig Cunningham on the show? Because we all know Craig's story. Back in November, went into cardiac arrest before a game. It got to a point where a lot of people, like medical staff down in Tucson, were thinking he's not going to survive. He does survive. A couple of months later, he had to have the lower part of his left leg amputated. So he can't play anymore. But great news today, the Arizona Coyotes have hired him to be a pro scout. And it's a great, great story. And we got him on the line.
Bring the man in.
Bring him in. What's happening, Craig?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing really well. I mean, I just broke down the details of your story. It's a very emotional one. It's a deep one. It's a heavy one. How comfortable have you become in talking about your story and what happened back in November?
yeah, I mean, it's obviously been a pretty public matter. And it's, you know, at the start I was kind of try to keep it as private as I could, but it was almost impossible. But, you know, I think now that it's, you know, I'm on the road to recovery and things are all moving ahead, I think that, you know, it can be a, you know, a good story for other people that are going through tough times medically and, you know, being on the verge of not being able to make it and, you know, having a medical team in place that did what they did to me and put me on the road to recovery. And so here I am today, kind of, you know, basically without, you know, minus the left limb, which has been a bit of a challenge, obviously getting around and doing stuff. But my heart's back to normal and everything seems to be functioning extremely well.
What are your memories of the actual being on the ice when it happened? I know that when players have concussions, there's certain feelings that are so hard to describe. What do you remember anything about what happened on the ice?
No, I don't. I don't basically remember anything from then to about 3 or 4 days before. You know, I've seen the tape, obviously, of what happened and stuff like that. But I you know, out of my own memory bank, there's nothing in there, and I'm somewhat thankful for that.
How emotional do you get hearing from doctors and the people around you that you were lucky to survive?
Yeah, I mean, it's it was tough for me, obviously, at the start. And, you know, when you're coming up, you know, highly high doses of medication and your brain's not fully, you know, there and you don't realize the severity of what has happened to you. And, you know, obviously, over time, I've really gotten in touch with, you know, the way things are for me now, and my doctors have worked very closely with me and educating me, and, you know, hopefully the doctor, the heart surgeon, and I have been working together to try and put something together that, you know, a screening program that can prevent this from happening, you know, to other people in the future.
We're chatting with Craig Cunningham, former NHLer. Last time he played a game, he was suiting up for the Tucson Roadrunners, the Coyotes AHL affiliate, back on November 19th. He went into cardiac arrest before the game and has since had to retire. Also had the lower left leg amputated as a result. But today is obviously a very positive day because Arizona, they made it official. They have hired you to be a pro scout. Take us through this process, how it was approached, and your reception to the idea of being a pro scout. Or was this your idea? Did you approach them?
No, it was a little bit of both. I mean, they kind of approached me early on in my recovery phase, and, you know, kind of said like, hey, there's an opportunity in our organization for you. We'd like you to be a part of it, and you know, we don't know on what degree or, you know, what exactly that we're gonna have you do yet. Do anything here, and obviously for me, I you know, I played major junior. I didn't go to college, and didn't have much else back. I was extremely grateful for the opportunity, and it gives me a chance to stay in hockey. I mean, I've been hockey since I was 4 years old, and you know, fell in love with the game, and you know, every day you know that I'm not around it, you know, is a tough day.
Oh, you were a scout for like a brief time, weren't you? Or you got involved in a way with like agencies and?
Yeah, I worked for a player agent, then I got fired.
Like, patience is tough, right? It's got to be a virtue, man.
Well,
like,
it's tough because when you're at the highest level, and I think that's what's one of the special qualities, because you're an NHL player and you're watching either younger guys or AHL guys, and you're thinking, why do you make that play? What are you thinking there?
I mean, definitely there's obviously two ways to look at it. I think, I'm sure guys were sitting there watching me being like, why did he do that? I don't understand why he's not good at that.
Right.
So, it's been definitely a different view, for me to look at the game, you know, through a scout and management eyes and, you know, just the way that they dissect players and stuff. And it's obviously been a learning curve for me, so far. And, you know, I think, you know, basically with, you know, the career path that I took through junior and being in the minors and, you know, getting called up and sent down, that, you know, I can help with, you know, the young guys that are kind of, they're not really sure where they're at in their careers, and, you know, you get called up and there's nothing worse than getting on that plane or in the car service back to the minor league team. And I think that's kind of a reason that they had brought me in.
With Craig Cunningham, who suffered a very public medical emergency back on November 19th, playing for the Tucson Roadrunners, Coyotes AHL affiliate. Today it was announced that he will be a pro scout for the Coyotes. So, I mean, you're still young. You're still going through this whole transition, and obviously it was something you weren't preparing for back in November. But has your long-term goal, how has it changed? Like, where do you want to take this? Because pro scouts, I mean, that can be kind of a stepping stone. Then you get into the front office, and then maybe a GM, president of hockey operations. Have you thought that far ahead?
I honestly, you know, I've thought about it a little bit, but you know, I think just right now it's a good stepping stone for me to get my foot in the door and see, you know, how I like the management and hockey ops side of the game. And obviously, being a former player, I have my own thoughts on the way things are and stuff like that. So it's gonna be a learning for me, but it's something that I'm excited about. And you know, to get an opportunity to start, you know, at the top, basically in the NHL, is a great opportunity. And you know, I think I'm young enough hopefully, you know, it's a stepping stone, and you know, I can get more involved in making decisions and learning, you know, from the people around me.
Well, listen, Craig, it's a great story. We're certainly looking forward to seeing where this takes you. Congrats on the news, and thank you for doing this today.
All right, thanks, guys.
Is Craig Cunningham, former NHLer, just hired as a pro scout for the Arizona Coyotes. Still a young guy, mid-20s. And as we know, went into a cardiac arrest back in November. Hasn't played since, won't play again. Crazy story, man.
Good on the Coyotes for kind of reaching out. And it's a difficult precedent to set because now, what, a guy has to shut it down for any different variety of reasons. What are they going to do? Go to their organization and say, hey, are you going to hook me up with something here? But I'm glad that they kind of did this.
I think because he's got, it seems like, a bit of a deeper history. He was the captain of the American Hockey League team.
Oh, I get it.
You know,
it's a great story.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would, the NHL, it's not a charity. It's not, there's no handouts. And being a pro scout, it's not an easy gig, man.
I know, Brian, but I'm pretty sure what's going to follow this. I follow a lot of former pro hockey players on Facebook. There's going to be a couple little things up saying, I wish an organization would have had a maybe looked after me, and I was just thrown to the side of the road, and now I'm in a rut, and I got this going and that going. And those are coming on Facebook.
But I think you'd have to counter with asking, did you even reach out and try to do anything yourself?
You know, or like, what about this question? And I understand it's a tough gig. When it's over sometimes, but did you even prepare for it? I didn't. I didn't prepare for it. I didn't really need to be honest with you.
You were lucky. You played long enough, made enough money.
But some guys, they just think it's, you know, $250 a week or whatever in the East Coast League, and all of a sudden it's over, and it's like, I got nothing. Well, what did you think was going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
They just don't prepare well enough, in my personal opinion.
Well, we talked about this earlier in the hour, the idea of walking away from the game. Guys do it at every single level.
I had to tell my best friend, he was in the East Coast League, just bombing around brutal towns in southern United States. And I finally said to him, I said, you're getting to the age where you got to think about, like, the rest of your adult life. This is fun for you and everything, getting hammered all the time with the hockey guys and doing this, but sooner or later you're going to wake up and be like, I got to start my real life.
And there's no way playing in that league you can possibly make enough money to put anything aside.
No way.
Like, you could barely live another 3 or 4 months.
No kidding.
That's the truth. And I'm with you, man. I still have guys playing. I'm 33. I still know guys who are kicking around playing. And they're never getting to the NHL.
Never.
Ever, ever, ever. They're not getting back to the American Hockey League. I can't imagine they're making, I don't even know what they would be making.
They love it.
They love it. And but I also think it's very difficult to detach yourself from what you've known. There's a comfort level. I'm a hockey player. I know this is waiting for me. Even if, whatever amount of money it is, 30 grand, 40 grand, it's something. And it's a livelihood. But it's not like making 30 or 40 grand working at the mill or so. You could work at the mill for the next 40 years. That 30 or 40 grand you're making, in the next year or two, it is off the table.
Yeah.
Gone. And it's that's what I was saying earlier about how, yeah, it's difficult to watch guys who played for 15 years, 20 years walk away. And I get why they're emotional. I understand why they're – it's their life. They're sitting there saying, I can't believe I'm never going to walk through those doors again or go ever step on the ice. But my counter would be, hey, at least you got to do it 1,200 times. Think about the guy who never got there but played 1,200 games in the East Coast Hockey League.
Or four for the Barry Colts.
There's more than that. I don't know how many I actually ended up playing, but I had to make that decision. I was like, I'm not going anywhere. I got to think about what I'm going to do.
Smart move, buddy.
You know? Because I don't know if I would have had the skill set to kick. I could have found a league. I could have kept playing and found a league and done something for a few years. And if I did that, though, I doubt I'm sitting where I am right now. Everything happens for a reason. You know, your path, it's going to lead to wherever it leads. But I don't want to get too philosophical and hokey here. But
we'll return after this break to the Dr. Phil show.
It kind of has that Dr. Phil feel to it. Maybe the show's been too emotional today. Too
trying
heavy.
To hook up people.
Yeah. We need Noodles back.
Yeah. We need him back.
We need his back to get back in form so he can get back on the show. All right, Jerry's percentages in the 6 p.m. hour, a rare appearance for Jerry at 6:30, I believe.
Noodles needs a good rub down.
I don't think he could handle it. He's got the stitches in his back.
He needs a rub down.
Steve Phillips coming up as well. We'll tell you what Ross Atkins had to say about how he projects the trade deadline to play out for the Jays as it currently stands today. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app.
So I get a text during the game yesterday in Ottawa from Ian Mendez, our buddy in Ottawa. He goes, I just spoke with Colin Campbell from the National Hockey League, and he has your passport. You left it on the airplane. So, Coley Campbell found my passport, and he brought it to Ottawa, and I got it back. I don't know how that happens to me. So anyway, I have to go up to the press box, and I say to this, there's this old dude there, and he's guarding the elevator. And I'm like, how do I get this thing to open? The up button won't even light up. He goes, just give it a couple, like, when it gets to level this, and they start hammering on the elevator, and it'll open. So I start just wailing on this elevator, and then it opens up. And I'm face to face with Jerry Bettman.
No way. Yeah. No way. What was that all about?
I was weird. I was going to, you know me, I get nervous and I want to say Jerry. So I'm like, hi, Gary.
And what was his response?
He just said hi.
But not like no small talk, nothing.
No, I've got a sneaky feeling he's not a massive fan of mine.
I don't think he's a big fan of yours. I know he's not a big fan of the show in general.
He never comes on.
He will not come on the show.
No.
Like, it's not a coincidence. We go to the draft with every other TSN radio station in the country, and they all have him in studio for like 20 minutes, and he just goes bombing right by our table. He will not come on this show.
No.
Ever.
No.
I didn't know he was in Ottawa last night.
I didn't know he had permanent bodyguards.
Is that right?
Even just a couple monsters.
Well, I guess he might get screwed around with a little bit. I guess you got to do that. He's a high-profile guy.
Yeah.
I don't think you need your passport to fly domestically anyway.
I'm pretty sure you need a passport to get on a plane.
I don't know. Within the country, I'm not sure you do. I don't think you do. This guy can't get his bag on the plane. He's leaving his passport. What is with your life, man? All right, we'll revisit this in the next hour. I've got a lot more to get into with that whole conversation. Jerry will actually join us. The only time he's willing to come on is every Wednesday. We missed out on him about 20 minutes ago, so he's coming up at 6:30. And Ross Atkins on how he perceives the team in terms of being a buyer or a seller. We'll tell you about that to kick off the hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050.